Hey there, Dave here, and before we get into this episode about PAX East 2024 and the games I played and the people I met and the memories I made, here's what's going on in Backlog Land. No guest appearances this week, but later this week there will be a bonus episode going on the main feed about Balatro. So if you, too, have lost hours of your life to Balatro, you can look out for that episode. I think that's a great time, and I want to thank the patrons that make the show possible. Big thank you to Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast crew, Zulgeek, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt, aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Ryan Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., and many more. Thank you so much for your support, and there will be a new poll going up in the next couple days for the Tales from the Backlog poll game for April. So stay tuned for that. All patrons get to vote in the polls, and those tiers start at $2 per month. So thank you very much, and without any further ado, let's get on to the show. Hello there, Dave here, and this week we are taking a break from the backlog to talk about the experience of going to PAX East 2024. So I'm sitting here a couple days after the convention ended, and if you can hear a little bit of funk in my voice, that's why. But I'm here today to talk about the experience of going to the convention, the things that I did, the games that I played, the Creed songs that I sang at karaoke. Maybe just one Creed song, but we had to mention that. But yeah, today I'm going to talk about the experience of going to the convention, the activities I did, and then finally run down the list of the 8 games that I demoed on the show floor, as well as a couple others that I didn't get a chance to play but bear mentioning as well. So, since this is my first time attending a big convention, let alone participating in one, this was a big learning experience for me in more ways than one. The first, the most striking realization that I had, and I will quote this from my running notes doc that I was writing in on the show floor, quote, "I am old as fuck, holy shit, what am I doing here?" End quote. As somebody who exercises regularly, I have good cardio, I'm in fairly decent shape, but I do sit in a desk chair all day long. This was by far the most standing and walking that I've done over a 4-day stretch in a very long time. So my body was feeling it. Luckily, I got into the groove of it as the show went on, but it was one of the most physically and mentally exhausting experiences in recent memory. But despite that, despite the fact that I came out of it without the capacity to feel emotions whatsoever, sitting in the airport completely drained mentally, physically, emotionally, it was a really reinvigorating experience as well. Because, and I'll get to the games in a second, but before I talk about the games, there were so many other aspects of the experience of going to PAX that filled me with motivation, energy, drive to continue doing what I'm doing here. And aside from that, the podcast has been growing, the community has been growing, the Patreon has been growing, things are looking up for Tales from the Backlog. But I just spent several days meeting some of my past collaborators and future collaborators in person for the first time, hanging out with them, not talking about video games, just hanging out, you know, learning more about them as people and as friends. So that has filled me with joy, energy, and inspiration from a creative perspective, but also just that human connection that, you know, podcasting online fills a lot of social needs. Doing these podcasts once a week, sometimes twice a week, fills a lot of social needs, but this was different from that perspective. So shout out to past guests on the show that I met for the first time, like Flora Marigold, Jacob McCourt, Matt aka Stormageddon, Jeff Moonen, Nick and Will from Friday Night Gamecast, and some future guests for episodes I've recorded already but are coming out in the future, like Adam Gumbert, Derek Van Dyke. All of these people I met for the first time in person. We hugged, we shook hands, we drank beers together. It was a great time. It was wonderful to meet these people in person when we had, you know, quote, met before. I also met lots of other people in the gaming industry, in the gaming creator space, people that I had previously only known as profile pictures and Twitter accounts. Now they are, you know, real people in the flesh standing next to me, singing My Chemical Romance with me at karaoke. This is a wonderful experience and something that I knew was going to happen, but I did not know how much it was going to fill me with creative inspiration, fill my heart up to the brim, meeting all of these wonderful people. I also took part in a panel on Sunday about the history of the Nintendo DS, and then with crowd participation, put together a list of the essential Nintendo DS games. That was with, again, Jacob McCourt, who did a fantastic job hosting the panel as always. Also, Brendan Groom, CG Danny B, Scott White, and Jenny Windham. I will put a link to the YouTube video of that panel down in the show notes. If you're interested in watching the video, you can also check out the Left Behind Game Club podcast feed for the audio if you want to listen to that in podcast form. And aside from all of these, you know, doing panels, social activities, it was just a very busy 4 days. Probably when I stack up, since the beginning of the pandemic, maybe since like my wedding day and like the time surrounding my wedding day, the busiest 4 days in recent memory. It was so jam-packed with playing game demos, having conversations with the developers of those games, having conversations with publishers, watching really funny panels, and hanging out with people before, in between, and after the actual events of PAX. That the 4 days went by in a flash, and only now it's a few days later, I can actually sit, things have started to settle, and can really reflect on the experience. Before I get into the games, I do want to give a quick shout out to my friends, Matt and Jeff from Fun and Games Podcast, Jacob, Joseph, Katie, and Flora from Left Behind Game Club and Crossplay Conversations Podcast, and Adam from Respawn Aim Fire for A, making the trip possible in the first place, and then B, more importantly, graciously welcoming me into their groups, social groups at the convention. I do not have co-hosts on this podcast. I am the only consistent person. So when I go to something like this, a big social event, I do not have a group of people built in to hang out with all the time. And it may surprise you that as a podcaster, as somebody who talks with new people every single week, sometimes 2 times a week, that I am really, really introverted in social situations. I'm not good at introducing myself, inserting myself into groups, things like that. So to have these wonderful people that made the effort to make me feel included in activities, in going to see panels together, in having meals together, things like that, it really makes the experience something really special, and I come out of it with just the best memories that I could possibly have from something like this. It really means a lot to me. So if you are one of those people, I probably already told you this, but putting it out there for the public that you are all wonderful people and I appreciate you all very much. Now, before I get too emotional, let's talk about video games. So like I said, I demoed 8 games on the show floor, some of which involved long lines to wait in, but those were worth it. All 8 of these games are worth looking into if they sound like something that interests you, and I'll say before I get to the big list of games that you can look down in the show notes below for Steam links, so you can put those on your wish list. Some of them are already in early access, so you can actually buy them right now if you want to do that. But all of them are worth checking out, so here they are, in alphabetical order. The first game on the list is Animal Well. Developed by Billy Basso and published by Big Mode, Animal Well is a 2D Metroidvania platformer-ish game that really, really reminded me of early Metroid games. in the way that you start the game out, you get a hint of a direction to go. You get a couple of tutorial prompts saying like, hey, this is how you jump. And that is all. And in the 10 or 15 minutes that I was able to play it, it really did a good job of showcasing a couple of really key things that I feel that this game is going to end up doing and expanding upon. The first of which is a supreme emphasis on player-guided exploration. In the, like I said, maybe 10 or 15 minutes that I played, I found probably 5 to 8 hidden paths, hidden walls, or just offshoots from the main path. The game opens up and it has you chasing a kind of apparition, we'll say, in a certain direction. So there's your light lead that, like, this is the way you should be trying to go. But there are all of these other paths that you can or can't see leading you off in different directions. So the emphasis on exploration and the emphasis on giving me a treat for being a good boy when I explore off the hidden path or off the main path, that was really, really apparent and an obvious point of emphasis for the developer here. I loved this experience of exploring. And when I saw the clock ticking down on the demo, I got sad. I wanted to keep playing. And that is something that, like, I didn't get from all of the demos here. A lot of the demos here I played for a little bit and I was like, okay, I get it. This is cool, but I get it. With Animal Well, I wanted to see how they would keep expanding on your interactions with the environment, expanding on the exploration. One of the things that the demo did was it had a thing out there that was going to try to get you, and you could also pick up these firecracker items around. And the game doesn't tell you to throw firecrackers at things that are trying to chase you, but you try it out, it happens to work, and you're able to pass through without dying. And I assume that it's going to expand on those interactions with the environment. Similar to like something like Rain World, which I covered on the podcast a little while ago, and absolutely loved how there are many, many ways for you to interact with the animals and things in the environment, but the game doesn't put up a pop-up message that says, throw firecrackers at these things to get away. So I'm really, really excited for this. The map looks really big from what I could tell. The graphical style is really striking, kind of got this old school like CRT style pixel art, but the colors are really, really bold, like LED looking or something like that. I maybe not coming up with the best words to describe it, but look at some screenshots from Animal Well, you'll see what I mean. I was really, really hooked by what I played. Animal Well is set to release on May 9th, 2024, and I've got a Steam link down in the description, and I'm very excited to get to it when it does release. So that's Animal Well. The next game that I played is called The Art of Flight, developed and published by Et Al Games. That's E-T space A-L space games. The Art of Flight is a shoot-em-up, an old-school shoot-em-up, very, very like old-school arcade style shoot-em-up. Vertical scrolling. Things scroll down from the top of the screen. You're at the bottom of the screen. Shoot 'em up. And the key thing about this, it's got that really old school pixel art aesthetic. It looks like an old arcade style shoot 'em up. The key thing about this one is instead of like picking up the standard shoot 'em up power-ups, you know, like instead of shooting one laser beam, you shoot 3 laser beams. The key thing that you're doing is as you play, there will be other ships that are in danger. And if you kill the enemy that's harassing those ships will join you. And they join in the spot in the formation. The formation is static across the screen. So like if you're a dead center at the bottom, but the ship you rescue is at the top right, that ship will stay at the top right as the screen scrolls. But you can pause the game at any time and you can rearrange the ships in your formation. So let's say there's a big asteroid coming on the right, you can pause the game, move that ship from the right down into a tighter formation with your ship at the bottom. And you can do this to avoid enemy fire, you can do this to avoid obstacles in the environment, you can do this to gain a more advantageous offensive position against enemies that are scrolling down. And as it is a shoot 'em up, it got really difficult, and I was never able to play for more than 5, 5 minutes seems like a long time, probably more than a couple minutes at a time without dying. But I did have the feeling that as I was playing, I was getting more and more used to how this works, how I should strategize with making formations. And I spoke with the developer. They said that their game also does have those traditional shoot 'em up power-ups. It has boss fights and all of those things too. So if you like shoot 'em ups, this is cool. I like the idea. I've never really seen one that allows you to adjust the formation like this. The developer said that as they were developing and playtesting, they initially had a power-up that multiplies the number of ships, if I remember right, and that everybody wanted that power-up all the time. So they said, fuck it, we'll make this the entire game. We'll make this the key thing, and then you'll get the other power-ups as you go. So that game is called The Art of Flight. You can wishlist it on Steam. It does not have a release date as of yet, but it does look really cool. I will be looking forward to it, and fans of shoot 'em ups should be looking forward to it as well. The next game is called Duck Paradox. This is developed by Magic Games and published by Midwest Games. And Duck Paradox is a side-scrolling twin-stick shooter roguelike, and very arcadey at that. Very arcadey setup to it. So the way it works is let's start at the very beginning. So there is one duck out in the level that you have to platform around, do some, unlocking doors, puzzles, and things like that to find this duck. Then when you collect the duck, you have to take it back to the entrance. There might be some enemies, there might be some platforming along the way. Once you get the duck back to the entrance, then it will set off an alarm of sorts where you have to kill a certain number of enemies to kind of stabilize it and get out. But the key thing is as the enemies are coming in, you do your twin stick shooting and your bullets, if they don't hit an enemy, will ricochet around. So you have to be very, very careful with where you aim, where you shoot, and things like that. So if you get too cavalier with shooting the bullets around, not only do you have some enemies flying around trying to come get you, but you also have bullets ricocheting around and you create a kind of bullet hell situation for yourself. If you keep, if you're like me and you're like, shit, 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 panic, panic, shoot, 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 shoot. And now you're like, oh no, now I have five of these bullets bouncing around that I have to dodge in addition to the enemies here. So it's a really difficult game. But I did get that really awesome feeling of like, okay, I died. I know why I died though. I know where I made a mistake. I need to be more careful. I need to be more calm next time. So here's how I'm going to do better, and I can't wait to try it again. It also has a really fun, bright, colorful pixel art aesthetic. And I had a really good time with this, and I know it won some Best in Show awards from some of our podcasting friends out there in the indie podcasting sphere. So you should look out for Duck Paradox if that kind of arcadey, roguelike, see how far you can get type of game loop appeals to you. It is available in early access right now, and there's a demo on Steam. Again, that is Duck Paradox. The next game that I tried is called Fallen Aces. This is developed by Trey Powell and Jason Bond, published by New Blood Interactive. And this was one, when I first saw the list of who was going to be at PAX, I saw that New Blood was going to be there. I didn't know what they were showcasing, but I was like, okay, hell yeah, I got to see what New Blood's got going on. So what they've got going on is Fallen Aces. Fallen Aces is a first-person gangster noir setting shooter slash melee combat slash immersive sim type game. So the first thing that strikes you when you look at Fallen Aces is this kind of gangster noir aesthetic and the visual style of it. So it is cartoonish. Everybody looks like cardboard cutouts. Actually, not everybody, everything in the game looks like a cardboard cutout to the point where when enemies turn or if you get on the side of an enemy, they are perfectly flat like a cardboard cutout. The designs on everything in the environment really fit this aesthetic really well. It's colorful. The voice actors are all playing into this noir type of setting really, really well. And the gameplay was a lot of fun too. So it's set up, it's first person, and I didn't really get a gun in there unless you count shooting, like spraying a fire extinguisher as a gun. but I assume that there are guns at some point in there. There were some enemies throwing things at me too. I didn't get a throwing weapon, but I assume there will be something like that. But what I did get is all kinds of objects around the environment, like trash cans, big wooden dolls, glass bottles, baseball bats, things like that. And so it's melee combat. You can also use your fists if you don't have a weapon. And one of the cool things about the combat here is that as you fight, the melee weapon that you have degrades and then breaks. But they might have some different properties in their, quote, broken form. Like, if you pick up a trash can and you bash someone with it, the can part of the trash can will be broken, but then you have a trash can lid that you can both use as a shield and bash people with. If you pick up a glass bottle, you can bash people with that. It'll break, but as we all know from, various movies and possible real-life situations, a broken glass bottle can be a weapon of its own. So what you're doing is you have very few permanent weapons. Actually, not very few. I didn't have any permanent weapons in the demo time that I played, which was about 20, 25 minutes long. What happened was I would pick up a weapon, I'd bash a few goons with it, it would break, I would use it, or I would toss it away, and then I would pick something else up in the environment. You can also throw stuff, like throw a trash can at somebody. And so it kind of has that immersive sim-like use whatever's in the environment to fight. And then there's another immersive simmy type of aspect to it too, where they will give you directions. They'll say, go to this dude's apartment. It's past this donut shop. Then you can open up your map. It doesn't show you where you are on the map unless I missed it. The show floor is a kind of chaotic environment. And for New Blood, for this game in particular, it had a long line and I was very conscious of the people waiting behind me in line when I was playing. So maybe I panicked and just missed this on the map. But what the map does show you is here is where the donut shop is. It's next to this comic store. So then you look out and all the stores are like brightly lit, very easily identifiable. So you can figure out your position based on that. And then once you find the right area of this little city block that this is taking place in, you have to figure out a way into these buildings. So there is a sort of immersive sim-esque feeling in that. It's not to the point where it's like you can hack the door or you can break the window or you can blah, 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 blah. But you do have to figure out like, okay, so I can jump up on this truck, then I can jump up on this balcony, then I can go in this open window, and now I'm in this building that was locked from the outside. Stuff like that. So that's Fallen Aces. It was a really, really good time. One of my favorites that I played at the show. Which shouldn't really be a surprise. New Blood generally picks winners out there, and they're really into that kind of old school feeling, first person aesthetic. This was cool. So that's Fallen Aces. It does not have a release date right now, but there is a demo available on Steam, and I recommend you check it out because it's doing some cool stuff. And if nothing else, I think they got that vibe of the gangster noir setting down really well. The next game that I played is called So to Speak. This is developed and published by Eric Anderson. And So to Speak is a puzzle game about learning Japanese. And I spoke with Eric on the show floor. They said that this game was inspired by Heaven's Vault, primarily, and then kind of retroactively or concurrently inspired by Chance of Senar. This game has been in development since before Chance of Senar was released. But that kind of using context clues and things in the environment to learn a language. In those games, it's fictional languages, and in this game, it's Japanese. So in the demo that I played, you get Japanese words in context. You'll go and you'll see a sign that says the shrine is this way, but it will just have the Japanese character for shrine on there. And so you need to puzzle out through clicking on things in the environment and gathering the English words, then matching them up with the Japanese words as well. So it's kind of like taking the perspective to language learning of what are you going to see when you get off the plane and go travel in Japan, rather than the language teaching method of, okay, we're going to teach you, especially with Japanese, we're going to teach you three written alphabets and some vocabulary lists, and then some grammar, and When you go to Japan, if you encounter these things, that will be cool. So to speak, takes the approach of, we're going to teach you how to learn things in context, and we're going to really emphasize things that you're going to come across if you actually go to Japan. So I only got to play this for about 10 minutes before I had another obligation where I had to leave. So the game didn't really get a chance in the time that I played it to show how it expands and becomes more complex. But I do like the approach of focusing on really common things, really important things in context first, and then like after all of this is over, if you decide like, yeah, I would like to be able to like read and write sentences in Japanese, you can take that on your own. That's not really the point of this game. So I would be interested to keep playing this and see how it becomes more complex and how it builds from that first 10 minutes that I played. But I do appreciate the approach to language learning here as someone who learned a language with a different alphabet in my late 20s. So if you're interested in learning Japanese and you're tired of all the other games that claim to be games that teach you Japanese, but what they are is really just gamification of drills, that is not this game, so it might be worth checking out. It is on Steam, it is not released yet, and it does have a release date in 2024 sometime, but there is a demo available if you want to try it out and see what I mean. So that is So to Speak. The next game that I tried out is called Sorry We're Closed, developed by A La Mode Games and published by Akupara Games. The Akupara rep that was at the booth described this to me as neon, queer, Resident Evil with Persona influence. And when I say Resident Evil, I mean fixed camera angle, survival horror, Resident Evil, the old ones. And that's definitely the vibe I got from this one. And then the other aspects of it come in with the bright neon colors, the, let's say, larger than life character designs, and some of the, like the main antagonist that you meet in this demo is striking and horrible and also very pink. The Persona influence comes from talking with characters, befriending characters, even antagonists and things like that. And some of the kind of camera perspectives, UI elements gave me a little bit of a Persona vibe. I also got a big Killer 7 vibe from the way this combat works. Your character gains this third eye, where if you activate it, you can switch between the kind of other world that you have woken up in. Your character gets home from work one day, lays down for bed, they wake up and they're in this like parallel world, basically. Their apartment door gets filled with this neon green light, this scary ass pink weirdo antagonist comes in. And then you're off to explore this other world. But when you open your third eye, you can kind of flash into the regular world. And you can use this for puzzle solving, but what you also use it for is in combat. If you turn on this third eye, you can see a weak point in the enemies. And if you shoot the weak point, you do way more damage to them. It is akin to, in those old Resident Evils, you know, shooting for headshots or shooting for the legs or something to knock enemies down. But also that Killer 7 thing where in Killer 7, you had to shoot those weak points. Otherwise, the Heaven Smile enemies would not die at all. So that gave me that kind of vibe. This game is very strange and interesting. It's cool. The character designs are very unique for a game that's set up like this old school Resident Evil survival horror style is really popular these days with indie developers. But I haven't seen one that looks like this and is going for the aesthetic things and possible story things that this game is going for. It includes a lot of survival horror elements, like going around solving little puzzles to open up doors, saving ammo, being careful about how you manage your resources, and things like that. So if that pitch, and I think it's a great pitch to describe in like five words what this game is, if neon, queer, Resident Evil persona sounds cool to you, then you should definitely keep your eyes on Sorry We're Closed. There's a planned release in 2024, and there's a demo on Steam right now. So again, that is called Sorry We're Closed. The next game that I tried is called Tape to Tape. It is developed by Excellent Rectangle and published by Null Games. It is arcadey hockey roguelike. So you're playing hockey akin to the old school NHL 94 is the touchstone for this old school hockey game. But you're playing with special abilities and special attributes for the arenas that you're playing in. So we played a 2v2 couch co-op versus match of Tape to Tape. And the team that I was playing on was called the Golfers, and their home rink was made of grass, and it had sand traps. So if the puck went into the sand trap, it would either stop or slow down dramatically. So just a little taste of what I mean when I say that the rinks you play in have special attributes, and the players have special attributes too. A lot of the players we played as had a special ability where they carried sticks on their back, and they could throw these sticks at other players and like take them out from across the other side of the rink. Other teams that we saw, like there's a team made of soccer players. They play on a soccer field and they don't have sticks. They just kick the puck, which I thought was very funny. So I'm excited to play more of this and see what other attributes other teams, other players have, other arenas and things like that. But aside from all of those, like, you know, weird aspects of the teams, the arenas and stuff, the game itself is just a blast to play. Everything was really snappy. Hockey strategy that I know of, you know, filling lanes as you're going down the rink, setting up one-timers, things like that, camping out, trying to get rebounds from the goalie, all of that stuff worked. And it was just a really, really good time to play. And it doesn't hurt that my team kicked the shit out of the other team that we were playing. But this game was a really, really good time. So if you like sports games, if you like hockey, definitely keep your eyes on Tape to Tape. It was in a previous Steam Next Fest. I remember downloading the demo last time, but I didn't have time to play it. So I'm glad I got to try it on the PAX show floor. It's in early access right now. There's a demo on Steam, so you can try it if you would like. It's called Tape to Tape, and it's a lot of fun. The last game is called Throne of Bone. So they get the award for best name on the show floor. And Throne of Bone is a roguelike auto-battler deck builder. So roguelike deck builder, lots of those out there, but not a lot of auto-battlers. So you set up your formation, and you set up the cards, and then it auto-battles once you hit go. You can pause it at any time because you do have some special abilities that you can key at certain points or at any point in the battle. But when you set up your cards, you build your deck, you build your minions, they all have special abilities that will say, like, when this thing gets hit, it buffs the things next to it. Or when this thing kills something, it buffs the card in front of it. Or, you know, this card can attack from the back row in a certain way, or it can ignore defenders that are in the front row of the enemy formation, yada, yada, yada. You get it. The formation that you set things in affects where they are being defended. If things are in your back row, the front row defends them. And it also affects what order they attack in. So let's just say top left gets to attack first, top right gets to attack second, back left, then back right. And your formation capacity expands as you play the game. So I personally had a hard time figuring out how the order of operations worked. I thought it could have used a couple more tutorial messages in there. But again, I want to reiterate that the PAX show floor is wonderful for trying the games out, but it is an environment that has a lot of distraction, sound, people maybe waiting in line behind you and things like that. So concentration is not necessarily at full capacity on the PAX show floor. So I'm not ready to say that this is like a great fault of Throne of Bone. It's just, you know, had a hard time concentrating because it is an abnormal environment for playing video games. But what I will say about Throne of Bone is if you like auto battlers, if you like deck builders, I think that there's a lot to really like here. And it has this cool, fun, cartoony aesthetic with all of these, you know, skeletons and slimes and minions that you are collecting for your deck. The illustrations on the cards are really cute. And it seems like there's a lot of really, really deep strategy to it as you go, with not only what cards do you put in your deck, but then how do you build your formations for these battles. So this is going to be released in early access on April 8th. There is a demo available on Steam right now. It is called Throne of Bone. And again, my deck builder sickos should probably check this one out. A quick honorable mention to three games that I did not get a chance to play on the show floor, but I either watched while waiting in line before I didn't get a chance to play, or just heard a ton about from other friends at the show. The first one is called Enter the Chronosphere, which won some Best of Show awards from friends of mine. And Enter the Chronosphere is developed by Effort Star, published by Joystick Ventures. Enter the Chronosphere is an action turn-based, top-down, twin-stick shooter. When I say action turn-based, I don't mean ATB like Final Fantasy on the Super Nintendo. I mean, think Superhot, actually. So in Superhot, time is stopped if you don't move. And that's the same way it works in Enter the Chronosphere. But in Enter the Chronosphere, there are more granular jumps between actions. Like, imagine you're moving on a grid instead of like the smooth, continuous movement that you have in Superhot. Enemies will take their actions when you do things like moving, shooting, reloading, etc. in Enter the Chronosphere. So it has this turn-based rhythm to it, where you can sit and think about your move for as long as you want, but as soon as you do your thing, the enemies are going to take their move too. So they might move out of the way of your shot, they might shoot something into the path where you're trying to move. If you forget to reload when you're getting into a hairy situation, reloading is just going to make that situation hairier. So it seemed like a really interesting time. Again, lots of people loved it. I did not get a chance to play it, but it looks fantastic. There is no release date right now, but you should put this on your wish list. Take a look at some of the videos on the Steam page. You'll see what I mean. It's called Enter the Chronosphere. The next game that I'm giving a quick honorable mention to is called Fretless, The Wrath of Rifson, or just Fretless. It is a turn-based RPG where you, quote, wield powerful legendary instruments, gather mighty riff attacks, and save the land from Rick Rifson's devilish goons and musical hybrid monsters. So it is a music-based, turn-based RPG. And looking at some screenshots here, it looks like it has some rhythm-based elements to it. And this one had a relatively small presence at the show, but it was really the talk of the people there. And if you listen to other PAX wrap-up shows, I think you're going to read, or I think you're going to hear about Fretless a lot. So again, this is called Fretless, The Wrath of Rifson. There's a demo on Steam. It's planned to be released in 2024. Please check that out. I think I am going to check out the demo for Fretless in the next couple of days as well. And the last game, the last one that I'm going to mention is Lucid, which is made by Matt Black Studio, published by Apogee Entertainment. Lucid is described by the developers as the world's first Celestovania, and it looks like a really good time. It looks very smooth to move. It has that same kind of like double jump and crystal to refill your double jump as Celeste did. The pixel art looks fantastic. And the movement and tight controls were the talk of everybody who got to try this at PAX. So though I did not get to try it myself, I think all it takes is one look at the Steam page to see that this is something to get excited about. Again, that's called Lucid. It does not have a release date as of yet. It also does not have a demo, so throw this one on your wish list and stay tuned, because I think a lot of you are going to really like this one. So that is all for the games and the wrap-up of the experience of PAX East 2024. I talked about it already, but one more time to reiterate that it was a good time trying the games. It was a good time to get excited about the games that people are making, as we have a lot of really disheartening things going on around the gaming industry with layoffs and with this whole, you know, attempted Gamergate 2.0 going on, or, you know, maybe it's not going on anymore. I don't know. But to kind of disconnect and just try some of these indie games that people are making, see that there is just an endless fountain of fantastic work coming from game developers. And especially, you know, all of the ones I've mentioned today are independent to some extent, some ranging from very small family projects up to, you know, ones with big names backing them. But the creative passion in the games that I tried is on full display and is something to get really excited about. So just to reiterate that this experience, trying these games and also meeting all of these friends in person for the first time and making new friends, future collaborators on Tales from the Backlog that you'll hear, was such a reinvigorating experience. As you know, anybody who either follows the industry, puts their heart and soul into the industry, puts their heart and soul into making things and the grind that that can be sometimes, to go there, hang out with these people, meet them, try some of these games, talk to the people making these games and working on the publishing side as well. It was just a fantastic experience. So before I start to repeat myself too much, I'm going to wrap this up. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you very much. This is the last scheduled episode of March, although, as a little treat, I have a bonus episode about Balatro, which will go up probably in a couple of days. That depends on how quick I am to edit. But stay tuned for that, and then we have some fantastic stuff coming in April. We have The Case of the Golden Idol, we have Sunset Overdrive, we have a conversation with Felipe Pepe, the writer of the CRPG book, talking about CRPGs and the breakout success of Baldur's Gate 3, and then the big one coming at the end of April, the Tales from the Backlog episode about Baldur's Gate 3. So thank you all for listening once again. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please give a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. If it allows it, that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, and YouTube. The show's on YouTube now too, so you can like, subscribe, leave a comment. I am happy to talk with everybody about the show. You can also jump in the Discord server. There's an invite link in the show notes. Come on in, talk about games, talk about the things at PAX East. If you tried some of these demos, I would love to talk about them with you. And last but not least, if you would like to support the show monetarily, you can do that at patreon.com/realdavejackson. With all that being said, I am going to go rest my voice. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.